Well, welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yetta. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive and deadly myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission here on Shattering Myths is to discuss what is actually occurring behind the headlines and to explain how these events will shape our world over the next 10 to 15 years. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on his terms through evidence and reason, not religion, since his is the lone reliable voice in an exceedingly troubled world. Our phone number for those who would like to participate in this discussion is 877-300-7645. Yesterday, we spent most of the morning covering Erdogan and the reality that his authoritarian rule, his Islamization of Turkey, has 20 to 25 fundamentalist Muslims. There was an editorial in carried by CNN that shared some insights regarding the problem with Turkey and Erdogan. While it wasn't as strong as it should have been, at least there were some glimmers of light in the editorial, so I wanted to share at least some of it with you. On Sunday, Mr. Erdogan went on television to reject accusations of dictatorial behavior while flatly discounting the protesters' legitimacy. And before I read what he said, there is a slight difference between Erdogan and a typical dictator. It is the same kind of attitude that I see displayed with Obama, which is that he comes across more messianic, as if he is the spiritual leader of the country, the savior of the country, the guided one, to use the German parlance, Der Führer, the leader. You know, that he is the only one with legitimacy and no one else has it. He said, "We should not yield." So we, now he is speaking of himself as the leader of the fundamentalist Islamic Muslims who control Turkey. We should not yield to a few looters. Now the fact is that the protesters are not looters. The amount of damage that has been done at these protests, which have been entirely peaceful, has been perpetrated by the government, not by the protesters. We should not yield to a few looters coming into that square and provoking our people, our nation, based on their misfortune. Boy, if you don't see arrogance here, if you don't see this attitude of superiority in his tone, it's the same tone that, by the way, is conveyed by Barack Hussein Obama. Mr. Erdogan said in a speech that managed to feel provocative, even as he called for a return to order. You think? Just a little provocative? Referring to the democratic, secular, scholarly community in Egypt, he called them looters. He called them provocateurs. He said that they were looting based on their own misfortune. Traitors also took to the streets of Ankara, the capital, and several other cities, where they were met by tear gas from the police. Oh, this country that says, oh, we are democratic. You're free to express your opinions. You can assemble peaceably in Turkey. Yeah, you can. But you're going to be met by the army, who's going to bludgeon you. Edhem Eldem, a historian at a university in Istanbul, criticized the government. He says, quote, in a sense, they are drunk with power. They have lost their democratic reflexes and are returning to what is the essence of Turkish politics, authoritarianism. You know, that's really unfair. The Turks, during the Ottoman Empire, were certainly a dictatorship, a theocracy, if you will. It was like all of the countries in Europe, except this was Islam as opposed to Roman Catholicism. But they were no worse for the wear than others. There was a period of time where the modern Turkey, born.
Hello, welcome back to Shattering Myths. I apologize for the difficulty during the break. We've lots of issues. Sorry, folks, but I've got my internet provider is out on the street changing a switch, and we got internet just literally 2 seconds before the show began this morning, and so I went from on the phone to the internet literally 2 seconds while they were playing the introduction music, and then something happened with the repair that caused it to fail again, and so somewhere as we begin to share the news with you out of Turkey, our internet connection, we use voice over internet protocol to send this from my studio to GCN. It failed again, and now we're having telephone-related issues, but it appears that our internet connectivity is back in, and after the first commercial break, we'll be back to you in the normal way.
It's been a very improvised show.
It has been an improvised show. All of the failures today, though, are on this end. They're related to my telephone and cable provider, so I apologize. We were talking about Turkey. And the issues related to Turkey, I don't know how much of what was said previously actually made it into the program. I was sharing what Erdogan had to say about the legitimacy of those protesting his Islamization of Turkey, making Turkey a country that is only accommodating of Muslims as opposed to a secular nation. And his response to those who are peaceful protesters, and you know, in Turkey, none of the protesters are waging automatic weapons. They have not rolled into town as they did in Libya with automatic weapons or rocket-propelled grenades. These are peaceful demonstrators. They are the real deal. In fact, in Turkey, unlike Egypt, where in Egypt the protesters came from a real tiny minority. It's about 5% of Turks that actually it's less than 5% of Egypt.
Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am Yana. You can engage in this discussion, and I would certainly appreciate if you would call in today. It's been a challenging day with the technology, as you have no doubtedly heard. Our toll-free number is 877-300-7645. Just as a recap so that you know, it's all on this end. We lost internet connectivity. We use internet connectivity in this business. Almost every show that you listen to now on the radio is recorded in a studio and transferred in a personal studio, not in a commercial studio, and transferred to the main studio via voice over internet protocol. But when the switch outside of your studio fails, which is what happened this morning with my cable provider, the whole system falls short. So we apologize for the technical issues, but we appear to have a stable connection at this point.
I guess I go a different route. I don't think we, like I told you, with all the issues that I have on other shows, this is one time where I've had an issue on your show with your connection.
Yes.
So I guess I'm of the opinion that it happens, and I feel like we handled it pretty well. And you got to listen to elevator music, I mean.
They are instantaneous. In my case, when I have a failure, they literally appear out on the street, responsive to the problem within 5 minutes of the call, and have always resolved the issue professionally. And so, with technology, there will always be bumps in the road. They appear to be more responsive and better than most. What we were talking about is actually a fairly interesting story. I do not think this story is going to go anywhere. I think the future relative to Turkey is set in stone. Turkey is going to become ever more Islamic. It has been on a 10-year journey towards becoming a theocracy, moving away from a secular democracy to a authoritarian theocracy, and I don't think that that trend is reversible. I think this is a notable, laudable last gasp by the remnant of freedom-loving, enlightened, a secularist in Turkey, and there still is a very significant number of those people in Turkey, where they represent far less than 5% of the population of Egypt. They do represent between 20 and 25% of the population in Turkey. I would surmise that in Tunisia, they represent the same percentage of the population. But for the most part, Turkey, as well as virtually every other Islamic country, is somewhere between 65 and 75% fundamentalist, Salaf. If they are Sunni, they would be just fundamentalist Shias if they are Shia Islam. It is the issue that we find throughout the Islamic world, where every time that there is an election, every time that the people actually go to the polls, they follow their imam's instructions. Their imam will tell them at the mosque that this is what Allah wills, and that if you do not do as Allah wills, then you will be treated to the Islamic tortures in hell. And they are brutal. You know, Allah threatens to personally tear the skin off of each of his victims, and then he puts it back on so that he can constantly tear it off. So it is a constant torture of having being flailed alive. He talks about himself pouring molten pitch down the throats of his victims over and over again. He talks about burning them, roasting them alive, burning them forever. He is the most sadistic of spirits. And the imams threaten their parishioners with these thoughts, that if they do not vote as the imam dictates for the most fundamentalist Islamic candidate, that they will endure Allah's tortures. So with between two-thirds and three-quarters of the population of the Islamic world now becoming fundamentalist, there really is no hope for a democratic reform in any Islamic country. Because when there is a vote, opportunity for secularism are drowned out, such is the case in Turkey. But they are raising their voices once again, and the response to them by the fundamentalist Islamist messianic figure in Erdogan is, we will not yield to a few looters who come into the square provoking our people based upon their misfortune. This will not end well for the secularists in Turkey. It's not going to end well for the world. And we'll return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Giada. We're considering the situation in Turkey. It is not analogous to the Arab Springs in other countries. Erdogan is at least correct in saying that. It has been inspired by those who are opposed to the current government. But the difference in Turkey is that it is the opposite of the conditions that existed in Tunisia, in Libya, and in Egypt. You see, in In fact, it's even the opposite of the situation that existed in Syria. In those four countries, the government was secular. Now, it was a dictator, but a secular dictator. A secular dictator in Tunisia, a secular dictator in Libya, a secular dictator in Egypt, and a secular dictator who still controls Syria. And so in those countries, the overthrow of the government was by fundamentalist Muslims. The Ennahda Party, which is the most fundamentalist Islamic party in Tunisia, took control of that country. The jihadist coalition of Mujahideen, fundamentalist Muslims who were stunningly violent, took control of Libya, and they've turned it into ground zero for terrorism in northern Africa. In Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood took control. In Syria, the rebels are Sunni Salafists or fundamentalists. They are jihadists being called from countries around the Islamic world. But in Turkey, the government is Islamic. Erdogan, over 10 years, has transformed a secular democracy into a religious theocracy. And so it is the opposite of what happened in those other countries. That is something that nobody in the media wants to discuss or doesn't think is relevant. And yet what we have here is the antithesis of what we witnessed in those other countries. Second, the reason that in Tunisia, in Libya, in Egypt, and perhaps what will happen also in Syria, although that is certainly up for debate, is that the majority, just as happened in Iraq when we allowed one person, one vote, the majority voted overwhelmingly for an Islamic government. Well, the majority in Turkey is Islamic, and they already have an Islamic government. Those who are protesting, the secularists represent between 20 and 25% of the population. And so there is no chance that this will turn out as those other countries did, and there is no hope for the secularists prevailing. All they can do is make life miserable for Erdogan, which wouldn't be a bad thing. But this is, men make no mistake about it, this is Islam versus secularism. The reshaping of the square, this Taksim Square, which was historically a place of public gathering, by Erdogan, he wanted to make it into a replica Ottoman-era army barracks that would include a shopping mall. Again, to return to the glory days of the Ottoman Empire with Ottoman-era look-alike barracks as a shopping mall. What the historian has called a Las Vegas of Ottoman splendor. And that is what initially incited the demonstrations. But there are many other contentious projects that have drawn public outrage. And throughout them, the only thing being preserved, the only element of terms of buildings that are being preserved are, guess what? Mosques. The outcome of the protest, according to this editorial, is still uncertain. That's not true. It is certain. I mean, all you have to do is count. I mean, the invasion of Iraq could have been stopped. We could have spared, if you will, a million lives and $6 trillion by just applying a little math. How many people in Iraq are Shiites? How many are Sunnis? How many are Kurds? How many are Christians? Okay, so we find out that two-thirds of the population are Shia Muslims. So if we replace Saddam Hussein and we allow the people one person, one vote, who are they going to vote for? And let's just do a little bit of head-scratching here. The two guys that collectively are enthroned over the Shias in Iraq Where did they come from? Oh, yeah, Iran. Let's figure this out. If we invade and we replace the suppose one government, what are we going to get? Oh, we're going to get a Shia government. What are they going to do? They're going to oppress the Sunnis. We're going to create a religious civil war. All you had to do is count. Well, in Turkey, all you got to do is count. You got 20 to 25% freedom-loving secularists, and you've got at least two-thirds of the population, perhaps as many as 70%, that are fundamentalist Muslims. This isn't going anywhere. Mr. Erdogan, however, striking a particularly defiant chord and noting that this is really over Islam, he vowed, he says, you know, I think what I'm going to do with that square is I think I'm just going to build another mosque in it. Yes, indeed. That is what's at stake. And the West, unfortunately, rallies around this man as if he were some kind of Islamic Messiah. Turning also to the problems related with Islam, we read from Reuters that suicide attacks on a French-run mine and a military base in northern Niger have shown an Islamic threat that is spreading across the weaker nations of the Sahara, meaning that France may be tied down there for many years to come. This is something that we shared the day that France announced that it was going to invade Mali. And the moment they did, I said, this is just like Afghanistan and Iraq. There's no way out. Yeah, they're smaller countries, smaller population, less at stake, but all they're going to do is spread the jihadists around. They'll, with everyone they kill, they'll manufacture 100 new ones. They're simply going to make the situation worse. It'll be their own taste of Vietnam, although on a smaller scale, where you go in facing a foe that you simply embolden, and then when you leave, no matter how many people you have killed, how many bombs you have dropped, how many bullets you have fired, you'll leave the situation worse than you found it. And that's really all that has happened in Mali. And as a result of invading Mali, the Islamists have been emboldened, particularly because of John McCain and Obama's crusade to ally with the Mujahideen, the jihadists in Libya, that Libya now has become the clearinghouse for not only jihadists, but for weaponry wielded by jihadists. And so regional rivalries are aggravating the problem for Paris and his Western allies, and a lack of cooperation between Saharan countries is helping the militants melt away when they come under pressure. And then, according to this article, they regroup and attack. Security officials say that lawlessness in southern Libya has become the ultimate haven for Islamic fighters after French-led forces drove them from strongholds in northern Mali earlier this year, killing hundreds of them. The south of Libya is what north of Mali was like before, said a senior advisor to Mali's interim president, who asked not to be named. Yes, we turned Libya into the new Afghanistan, the place where fundamentalist Muslims are armed and prepared and trained to kill. It was like the Sudan before it. It was like Somalia. But now it is Libya, a much richer country that now has all sorts of advanced weaponry, all supplied by the United States via its proxies in Qatar and the Sudan. Niger has said last week that suicide raids, which killed 25 people at an army base and a desert uranium mine run by France, were launched from Libya amid growing tensions between the two countries. Of course, Libya has denied this, but Libya now is run by the very Mujahideens that are perpetrating these attacks. Thank you, John McCain. You should be so proud. The overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi in 2011 flooded the Sahara with weapons and ammunition. Thank you, John McCain. You should be so proud. Tuareg separatists, using them to seize power in northern Mali, not only ousted better-armed Islamists, but then set up training camps and imposed harsh Islamic law, which as a result caused women to be raped, to have men's and women's arms and hands cut off on opposite sides, all in direct accordance with the Quran's instructions. The population mutilated. Thank you, John McCain. You should be so proud. The Islamists have also exploited Libya's weakness. Islamic commanders, veteran jihadists like Belmokhtar, bought weapons there after Gaddafi's fall, and his fighters have passed through southern Libya to carry out mass hostage taking. One such example was the Algerian gas plant, where 37 foreigners died, all as a direct result of America's support for the Mujahideen that ousted Muammar Gaddafi. Thank you, John McCain. You should be so proud. Turning to another story, this one from Reuters, we learned that at least 7 bombs battered Shiite and Sunni Muslim neighborhoods across Baghdad, killing at least 16 more people in what has become the worst wave of sectarian violence since the civil war was fought 5 years ago. Who was the great proponent of this war besides George Bush in getting us into a war based on lies? Lies that that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, lies that Saddam Hussein had bought yellow cake uranium from Nigeria and was going to make a nuclear bomb, lies that Al-Qaeda was based in and operating in Iraq and that we were at war with Al-Qaeda so we had to invade Iraq to fight them, when absolutely none of that was true. But who was the great cheerleader? John McCain. Thank you, John McCain. 1 million people have died as a result of your arrogance, of your lack of morality, of your lack of judgment. And the killing continues. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. I am your host, Yana. During the break, I was telling the story of John McCain, how I came to know him, and how he eventually lost to George W. Bush in the primaries in the South, I think in Virginia and in North Carolina. And it is really an interesting story of political intrigue as to how John McCain did not become President of the United States and George Bush ultimately did. But it's a longer story than I can tell in the six-minute segment that we have remaining in the news hour. So Scott's reminded me to share that story in an upcoming program. But I do want to conclude our discussion on Iraq. This particular article says that the bloodletting reflects an increasing conflict between Iraq's majority Shiite leadership and majority Shiite populations, about 2/3, and the Sunni minority, many of whom feel unfairly treated since the fall of strongman Saddam Hussein, who they say here was a Sunni. Well, Saddam Hussein was a Sunni. He wasn't really a Muslim. There was no association between him and Islam other than he drew his power base from his tribe. The Muslim world is still very tribal. And his tribe fell on the Sunni side of the divide in Iraq. So the Sunnis were favored during Saddam Hussein's secular rule over that country, while the Shias were constantly trying to oppose him, and so the Shias were treated less favorably than the Sunnis. Now, part of the reason that Saddam Hussein treated the Sunnis less favorably is that Saddam Hussein, as Iraq, was at war with Shiite Iran, and the Shiites in Iraq were all Iranians. They were loyal to the same religious faction that Iraq was fighting in Iran. And so, you know, they were a fifth column. They were the enemy within his borders, and he knew it. And so the only way for Iraq to continue to survive against Iran was for Saddam Hussein to oppose Shias in Iraq. But when the United States deposed Saddam Hussein and instilled the opportunity to vote, the Sunnis, a two-thirds majority, simply voted to empower the Iranian government in Iraq. And that's what we have. It was unbelievably stupid what we did in Iraq. And the likes of John McCain and George W. Bush don't get it. They still don't know that what they did was unbelievably stupid. In fact, the other day, in the midst of all of the carnage in Iraq and the fact that it obviously was an unmitigated failure, the Rumsfeld, the Secretary of Defense, was asked, you know, what do you have to say, you know, for the fact that a million lives have been squandered and $6 trillion of American coin? And he said, well, we at least gave them a chance. No, you didn't. You didn't give them a chance. You broke a secular country. A secular country without any fundamentalist terrorism. And what you left in your way in the wake was not only a broken country and a million people dead, but the religious zealots of Tehran in charge. And if that's a chance, I don't want you ever providing me with one. Now, this article says the civil war in Syria between Sunni rebels and President Bashar al-Assad, whose Alawite sect derives from Shiite Islam, has aggravated the strife in Iraq. Now, that's not true, Mr. Reuters journalist. It's the other way around. The fact that the what was a peaceful protest in Syria turned deadly was because of the awakening councils the Americans had created in Iraq as a counterbalance to arming the Shias managed by Tehran with advanced weaponry. And the only way we could keep them at bay is we provided light arms to the Sunni awakening councils. It's those Sunni awakening councils that went across the border and said, you know, we're not prevailing to get a Sunni country here in Iraq, because we're so outnumbered, but we're the majority in Syria. Let's turn that protest into an armed insurrection, into a civil war. We have a better opportunity there. And so it's not a case where Syria has aggravated the problem in Iraq. It's Iraq, because of what America did, that aggravated the problem in Syria. And as a result, systematic violence is ready to explode, even according to the United Nations. We lit a time bomb. Thank you, John McCain. You should be so proud. We'll return to Shattering Myths in a moment.